to the three people listening to this around the world, sponsored by British Rail, coffee shops, and divorce specialists, I bring you the Alcohol and Addiction Podcast, live from the Ogmore Valley Studios. It's time! Introducing first, fighting out of the blue corner, the heavyweight champion of the world, with a professional record of 3.3 million confirmed kills per year and a causal factor in more than 200 illnesses and diseases. Hailing from all parts of the world, the invisible, the dominant, the violent belief system known as Alcoholism. And now, your challenger, fighting out of the red corner, weighing in at 10 stones soaking wet. This man has beaten addictions in every weight class, with his only professional defeat being his inability to stop talking over his guests. Hailing from Starbucks joints around the world, he is not an alcoholic. He refuses to be anonymous. He doesn't drink alcohol and spends every waking moment helping other people do the same. Your host, Mr. Lee Davey.
Welcome to another episode of the Alcohol Addiction Podcast. My name is Lee Davey. I'm not an alcoholic. I refuse to be anonymous. I am someone that doesn't drink alcohol. I spend every waking moment of my life helping other people do the same. How are you all doing, folks? I am currently in Ogmore Vale. I've been here now for a little over a week, I would say. I came back home from LA to spend some time here with my son over his 18th birthday. And it's been really nice. We've had some good times together. I did a couple of podcasts on my experience around his 18th birthday, which will air at a later date. And yeah, I've had some good time. Went up to Manchester to see my cousin and to meet one of the Truth About Alcohol ambassadors, John. I met him in Bolton, so that was really nice. Going to be spending some more time, particularly when I come back in April, going around the country to see fellow strivers, fellow ambassadors. And I would really like to start making monthly live meetup groups around the world, really. It's going to be a little bit difficult starting off because our liquidity, if you like, is not great. So we're not always going to get big numbers. But I think we do have a real core group of people at Strive now. We're really interested in extending these relationships and getting to meet each other in the flesh. So that's going to be a wonderful opportunity. Really looking forward to that. What else is going on here at Strive and Truth About Alcohol? Well, I've noticed very recently, I've joined a marketing and branding mastermind, if you like, called The Right Company. It's an experience led by Bernadette Jiwa. I'm a really big fan of Bernadette Jiwa and Bernadette Jiwa's work around branding and marketing. And I've been there and, you know, look, I'll be honest with you, in the February taster, we only had one person join the February taster. That was Anna. She's doing some great work over there with Nikki. And it was a little bit of a kick in the balls, to be honest. You know, when you work really hard and you put this time and effort in and you're so desperate to help people and you think you have an audience of people out there that really value your work and want to become people that don't drink alcohol, and when you only see one person joining the February taster, and you know we're running surveys now and the feedback coming back, none of the feedback is anything to do with money or anything like that, you know, then it, you know, you start to doubt yourself and you start to doubt your work. So sharing those doubts with The Right Company, I got some really great feedback, some really great questions that got me thinking. And what I realized is around 80% of the people that listen to this podcast and 80% of the people that, you know, read my blog posts and join my email list, they're not ready to change yet. They're not ready to stop drinking alcohol and take action to that effect. And that's fine. And now I know that, and now I understand that, I can start doing something about that. So we're going to create a new product. That new product will be for that 80% of people. The people who are not yet ready to change, the people who are still drinking alcohol, they still want to continue drinking alcohol until they can figure out and fathom out what their next steps are going to be. So we're going to create something. It's currently got the working title, The Cave. It's going to be free of charge. So we will see how that goes, and I'll keep feeding back some information to you when we release that. So I'm really excited about that. What else is going on? Or some guests coming up on the Alcohol Addiction Podcast in the near future. We have, Scott Stabile. He wrote Big Love. Scott Stabile is going to be on the show. Strive Ambassador Stella and her daughter Georgie are going to be on the show talking about the parent dynamic around drinking alcohol when a daughter and a mother. How does that dynamic work when you're drinking? How does that dynamic work when you stop? Scott is going to be talking about love and how we can introduce love into our life. We're going to be speaking to James or Janice, Prochaska, the authors for Changing to Thrive and Changing for Good. And we're going to be talking to those people about the six stages of change. So that is going to be really interesting. The UFC ring announcer, entrepreneur and speaker, Bruce Buffer, is going to be on the show. We're going to be talking to Bruce about how to be successful, basically. Who else? Entrepreneur Alex Dreyfus, French entrepreneur Alex Dreyfus. Alex has never drunk alcohol in his life. So we're going to talk to Alex about how is that even possible? And what is the culture of drinking like in France? So we're going to be talking to him. We're going to be talking to Janet over World of Wine. I think they're in South Africa. They're like a group like us. They're helping people stop drinking alcohol. So we're going to be talking about Janet. That'll be very interesting. Who else are we talking about? We're hoping to get Jack Canfield on the show. Jack has told me to give him another bump the end of this weekend. So I'm hoping to get Jack Canfield on the show. Jack had a book out, the 30-Day Sobriety Plan or something. But really, I want to talk to him about the success principles. And getting Jack on will be a defining moment for me because, as many of you know, it was Jack's book, The Success Principles, that helped me on this journey. So really looking for that, forward to that. And what we're going to try to do as often as we can, and dependent on our guests, is we're going to try to make them interactive. So I interview my guests on Zoom. Zoom gives you the ability for multiple people to join. So if you're a member of Strive, you will get the opportunity to watch the interviews live, and then you'll have a little moment at the end to ask some questions. So you won't have to wait for the podcast to air. You could watch it live. So they're all the things that we're trying to do at the moment. So we'll keep you informed on those type of things. Now, on to today's guest. Today's guest is Igor Kurganov. Igor Kurganov is a professional poker player and an effective altruist. I first met Igor Kurganov in Monte Carlo at a poker tournament several years back. He was playing three-handed against Philip Grusom and Daniel Negreanu in a 100,000 euro buy-in competition. Igor has won millions and millions of dollars playing poker online, and he donates a significant amount of that money to his nonprofit, which is called Raising for Effective Giving. And you might have heard that name before. Raising for Effective Giving is the effective altruist movement that we are a part of here at The Truth About Alcohol. So 5% of everything that we earn at The Truth About Alcohol goes to Raising for Effective Giving. And as we grow and our numbers grow and we get more financially sound, that 5% will keep increasing until hopefully one day we'll be able to give 100% of profits away to effective altruism movements via places like Raising for Effective Giving. Igor is the founder of REG. He's also a representative of the online poker brand PokerStars. And it was during a PokerStars event at Bahamas that I met Igor. We talked for about 45 minutes. We talk in the beginning about poker, but then it goes on to topics such as loneliness, friendships and networking, serving others, the major changes that Igor's made in life. You know, just get past the poker bit in the beginning. It's fairly interesting anyway, but I like interviewing people like Igor because Igor's with it. You know what I mean? He's with it. He's the type of guy that is fortunate enough to have breakfast with Richard Branson on Necker Island sometimes. He has a really great network. He's a very smart, intelligent man, very emotionally intelligent and very successful. And we can learn a great deal from people like Igor. Igor's also the boyfriend of Liv Bury. And Liv Bury is another guest that we've had on the Alcohol and Addiction podcast recently. So those two work together on Raising for Effective Giving. There are lots of links if you go to the truthaboutalcohol.co.uk to the blog section. There are lots of links about all the different podcasts that Igor talks about, because he talks about some wonderful podcasts. So you can go and check out the links there. If you've got any questions for Igor, send me an email at truthaboutalcohol@gmail.com. And without further ado, I'll shut the hell up and leave you in the presence of Igor Kurganov.
So this is going to be transcribed afterwards, or is it going to be audio?
I'll just transcribe it.
Yep.
Yeah. I'll just transcribe
Calvin
it.
Calvin Air, right?
Where are you going to? I was going to post it on Profile Poker.
Cool. I mean, either way.
Because we're turning that into a high roller site. So yep. You're a high roller, okay, cool. Igor.
All right.
You know, you get special privileges. I'm going to start off with a really, might be a tough question. I posed it to Eric Colriser last night.
Okay.
And I won't tell what he said, because that will spoil it.
Yep.
But we've just had these PokerStars Players Championships, phenomenal success. Mm-hmm. So have you had any thoughts yourself personally? What do they do next? in terms of this format, like, does it go on? Does it end? What do you think?
I mean, this will certainly be something that the Stars people, I think, still need to figure out. I think that was depending to a degree on, like, how this goes. Given that it was a great success, I'd be surprised if it was completely eradicated from the future.
What would you do?
How these things sometimes go is, because it is obviously very expensive to do it as a, like, 320 giveaway plus a million on top, etc. It might be a bi-yearly thing. I don't know. I might be something like that. What I would do is probably make it a little bit smaller and try to do it yearly. Mm-hmm. I think the 320 people giveaway was just insanity. Like, it's not something you need to do necessarily. I think like 100 might be enough, and then you, I don't know, just add other perks to the whole experience. Something should be around. Like, this is great, but I think they'll just need to look at the numbers, and I don't know the numbers, how it went, like, in terms of how they figure the promotion counts, etc.
It was great. One of the things we were talking to Eric last night was in order to, like, spend a year doing this, what they actually did is they provided content for an entire year. It wasn't just this. Everything that they did around this provided content. It was in the media every week.
But it also is a thing that reduces, actually, if you make it into a yearly thing, because then the excitement is smaller, therefore the people's thirst for reading about it is smaller, and like, then the content doesn't matter as much anymore. So that's why it might be reasonable to do it as a bi-yearly thing, which would be, of course, sad, because I want to have this every year, but... Yeah. Yeah, I don't know where it's going to go.
We manage with Christmas, mate. We have Christmas every year. Well, we did when I was a kid, and we managed to get that excitement every year, you know?
Yeah, but look at that slowly deteriorating and becoming something else as well. Like, nothing holds on.
Now it's just a load of materialistic nonsense that gets me into debt.
Well, that's at the same time what drives the economy and makes people survive, because pushing the GDP forward is good, and economical spend makes...
You're making me feel better already.
Yeah, I mean, you're buying it off someone who is, like, producing the thing and, like, can pay their bills now with this, to buy some stuff from someone else, etc. This is a very...
Need to adopt your outlook on life more often.
Yeah, no, it's optimistic whenever I need to be, but usually I'm not that optimistic when I try to make decisions for myself. But afterwards, when I can't change the fact anymore, it's, well, might as well be not too sad about it.
Mm. Yeah, no, I agree with that. You've been doing well in the High Roller Club online.
Yeah, that was
I'm interested in how... I get this vision of some people just like kind of waking up and like turning and on half asleep and then playing and then it's finishing and they go back to sleep, and I got this different view of you, I don't know why. So I'm interested in your pre-game routines and your post-game mm-hmm. routines, if that's okay.
Yeah, I used to be exactly as you described. Like, this was to my 2 years of like grinding up the stakes while still at university a bit, etc. Was genuinely just wake up, play all day, watch and read and do some poker content and go to bed and wake up and do that, and that was 2 years, and eat a ton of frozen pizza at the same time. But nowadays it's a little bit different, and like, I don't want to put in time only into poker. Well, I mean, who does 17 hours a day? That's it's a bit much, maybe. So I like what the High Roller Club provides, which is a few tables within a short amount of time that you can start playing. And given that I live in the UK, I then often start either at like 7 p.m., including the early 1K, or at like 9:30, 10 p.m., and then it's only a session if I start at 9:30, 10, which has four or five tables of 501Ks, which has an average play time of like 1.5, 2 hours. So it's a really short little session, and even if you win, it's like 4 hours or something. Right. So it's like, it's really, really neat, and I do enjoy the ability of jumping in, like trying out some stuff that I studied, and like playing against good players that consistently grind those. It's really just it's a pleasure to have like this low commitment.
You don't have any rituals that you do before you go in, or like calm down?
I don't have specific rituals in terms of like I touch my little cactus and then I stroke the monitor or something, but I do like to have a clean workspace and that is the case when I do anything pretty much on the computer, which means I just don't want to have distractions within my visual field too much, which is why my tables, etc., are also just like as black as possible, and then the information is the only thing that jumps out. So as a ritual, I guess I want to be slept, have coffee in me, and just not too many distractions around. I guess I close all the tabs, etc., and like just make it neat. That's the only thing that happens pretty much.
And talking about distractions, I see you went into Twitch, which is like, okay, that's a distraction. How is that? I know it goes both ways. So how has that improved your game, and how has it had a negative impact on your game?
I think there was maybe absolutely no improvement for my game from being from streaming myself. Because, like, I mean, it's true that if you teach or talk about your game over time, it improves it, but it's not quite, I'm not in the, like, smooth enough with Twitch usage yet that I can just focus on speaking while, and like, have that be valuable to myself as well, because it's, I first needed to figure out like the controls, which in my first session like finally then ended up being okay towards the end. And the second time I did it, it was smoother and I enjoyed it even more. I also liked the first time because I do like the audience interaction quite a bit. So this is also why it's less about the game to a degree, because the audience interaction is to part just about life, science, or like just general topics and live. So it's a lot about life and live. And then I do talk about the game as well, but it's often given the audience like fairly low level explanations, and fairly like I explain simple things first, and I try to like add on some complexity to it and show which parts are interesting. So I try to explain the KOs and how to think about that, because I think quite a lot of people make a bunch of avoidable mistakes in those. And I do enjoy that part. Like, I like that. I do like the idea that there is a set of people who are interested in poker who make some very avoidable mistakes if they just had like 10 times two sentences that would help them quite a bit. I think it evens out the playing field a little bit, and it's not, I think that would just be better.
I've been thinking very seriously of using Twitch to help coach people to stop drinking alcohol. I was wondering if the same could be done for, you know, things that Reg has to speak and to educate and stuff. It's used for gaming now, but I think it could be used for so much more.
Yeah, right, because like what it is and it's in by itself is just it's a live stream of whatever with the ability to interact with the audience that's listening.
Yeah.
And that allows for pretty much anything. And the audience interaction, I mean, it would be even better if like that could be improved, actually, the audience interaction part. I was seeking to have like more interpretable feedback by me during it, among the lines of like putting out a poll and then people can vote and I can just adjust what I talk about, for example.
Very quickly.
Yeah. But you have like dozens, hundreds, or thousands, or tens of thousands of people sit there, and either case, you'll probably have at least 10%, probably like way higher percent of people answer that poll if one was put up. So I'm wondering how to do it. I think like so far I was asking a question on Twitter, but it would be nice to, within that conversation, for example, you're talking about addiction, and you then you're not sure if like there's, because addiction, relevant topics within addiction are like manifold, and maybe right now the audience is such that they don't actually need to hear about that one part because they're also already quite familiar, and you should rather talk about something else.
Yeah,
and like that's something you would like to get feedback on, but it's sometimes hard within like a 5-minute monologue to read at the same time.
You'll just see one person say, "Oh, please talk about you know, this part of effective altruism or whatever," but really, yeah, there's a core of people who want something different. It's also a really excellent way and a very transparent way of monetizing it and being able to use that money for charity as The Jungle Man Tom Dwan heads up thing, which is just a joke, just came up recently again because Jungle Man tweeted it. I don't know why he tweeted it. He plays with him often enough. Like, you know, who would you like to see play heads up against each other, and why?
I mean, for me, as long as the cards are shown, it would be mostly about poker, and then I would just like to see the best in the world play against each other. And life, though, maybe as well. That'd be good. And if it's about other stuff, then, well, just like people I want to have more airtime of, like have Elon Musk play against the Dalai Lama or something like that. Have them just talk about stuff. I want to hear them talk to each other, basically. But play very slowly and just mostly have conversation.
I remember watching Jungle Man play Elky on GPI when they were both talking to themselves but they couldn't hear each other, and I thought it was absolutely fascinating. No names in poker, no two people you would like to get the advantage of really looking at their whole cards?
Well, I do get to do that pretty frequently anyway. So, like, all of my opponents very frequently play televised games or streamed games, and in those, I then afterwards get to see how they're thinking about the game, which I think is a great, like, learning tool also for anyone who wants to just figure out some more things, because it is a good exercise to notice when you are confused about what others are doing and then understand they know what they're doing because they're there right now, so I should try to understand and like integrate that somehow.
Can you talk a little bit about your meditation practice and just share if you've tried any meditation apps, which ones of them were good, which ones of them weren't, how what you do at the moment?
I used to do it more like in 2013 and 2014, I was meditating more frequently and doing more yoga. I kind of fell out of it. I don't know, like the habit hasn't been built strongly enough, I guess, and I was focusing on other things. The thing that really stuck though is like general mindfulness when doing things, which I guess is like relating to it as well, meaning like just focus, like not trying to not have too many thoughts of the past and the future at the same time while actually walking, and like you have beautiful surroundings, or while eating food that is pleasurable or something like that. And with those you can actually just, I mean, it's just a nice way to get happy experiences, because you're just there. You could be worrying about something, but actually it's beautiful and you're making yourself notice the beauty in the moment. So it's like a nice little hedons that I get for myself through that. Otherwise, I think I do. The other thing I still do is like a 30-second or 1 minute like reset or something like that of my thoughts, where I just like try to calm my mind, which is also possible just like in a short moment at the poker table or in a break. And that I still do. But yeah, I wonder whether I'll make myself do it more frequently, live as meditating a bit more frequently than me.
You never tried any of the apps or anything like that?
I did try Calm and Headspace. I had those for a little bit. They're nice. I mean, I just didn't continue. I do like guided meditation. It seems, especially for novices, it's like easier than to, not, I guess, well, to just have someone tell you what to do a little bit and have something to focus on to a degree.
The waking up app.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I listened to that as well a few times.
He has not just the meditation, but he has little exercises, but little thought kind of things that he talked about, and I find that really helpful. So on the Sam Harris point, what are the podcasts you're listening to, and why do you listen to those particular ones?
I've listened to quite a few by Sam, and I used to listen to Tim Ferriss, but stopped because like the topics just not changed. I don't know. I like his style a little less nowadays, I guess. But it's also not because he's worse, just because like I care about other things to a degree a bit more. And so I still sometimes listen to Sam, but I make it dependent on who the conversational partner is.
Okay.
Because, I know, it's just nice to listen to Sam's voice. It's pleasing.
Do you listen to Sam's voice on 2.5x?
Yeah, you have to.
If I ever met him in real life, I'd be like, is this somebody? Has he had a stroke? Like,
no, I met him at TED, and we had dinner as well in a group, and... he is like in person he speaks faster,
right?
Yeah, but still just like a pleasure to listen to, because he just clearly, like, many people are a bit against like some of the points he is making and like put bad ethics into his mind, and I think that's really like ill founded because he clearly cares. Like, it's just like it's clearly a good human at heart, from the things that I listen to, how he thinks through problems, etc. My favorite podcast, though, is 80,000 Hours with Rob Wiblin. They get amazing guests. They are obviously closer to the effective altruism community. I mean, they're at the center of it, I guess. Yeah, and they talk more frequently about topics like far future thinking, existential risk. But they also talk about ethics. They talk about just technology sometimes. And they get like just top professors within their fields on very frequently, and it's amazing guests. And also Rob is just very, very smart and can have a very good conversation with the people. He recently had one with Hilary Graves that I really liked, with Amanda Askell about infinite ethics, and they also had Joshua Green on and a few other people.
I used to listen to it way back, and then
today I was listening to they published the one with Toby Ord.
I listened to that one.
Yeah, it's Toby Ord's just
they needed to get more consistent. They were like, it was almost like they'd given up on it, but it's good to know that they're back.
Yeah, they're back. They had now 50 podcasts that he's done.
I use a lot of the 80,000 Hours work in the alcohol addiction field, actually, because when people recover from drinking alcohol, they don't know what to do with their life, and B, feel this real surge of energy and enthusiasm and philosophizing, and we're like, okay, let's figure out how we can best plant you back into the world, and 80,000 Hours does a really good job of that.
Yeah, even if you don't care that much about effective altruism or other topics, the thing that it does really well is it's just challenging thinking. Like, they are thinking really, really well about any topic they're discussing, and like try to be very careful with being correct with their statements that they're making, and it's just a great exercise in how to think through problems, to listen to people who are geniuses within their fields.
I'm going to go on a complete tangent now because of that, actually. I also listened to Seth Godin's Akimbo podcast, which I think is fantastic, and he just did a podcast this morning called Stop Stealing Dreams, and it's all about how the education system is screwed, right? How it doesn't make sense, and that people are not asking the question, why am I doing this? Why am I doing this exam? Why am I in school? What is school about, right?
Right.
And it just struck me suddenly that 80,000 hours in their philosophy and the things they talk about, that would be absolutely fantastic if that was in education, if that was in academia. So my boy is learning about those options as he's trying to figure out what he wants to do. Now, mm-hmm. he's probably not going to know what he wants to do at 17, 18, but that having that option of serving right in your face, I think, would be quite wonderful. Mm-hmm. What's your view on education when you think about the education system?
I know too little about it. I haven't emerged too deeply into the topic, and I did like just watch some people talk about it and listen to some people talk about it, and I mean, it seems that we have an ill-designed system for what we actually need in terms of what jobs there will be. And you can educate yourself a lot online nowadays, which is maybe, it's not that bad even that the educate, like maybe the fact that the education system seems not optimal anymore for the time we're in might not be that bad as long as the social aspect is still in the forefront within the students. Because they can just learn anything they want online. Like, you can find any course nowadays online and yeah. just read or watch whichever you want. Have also interactive watching where you can pause the lecture, you have to answer multiple choice stuff. It's amazing. I'm curious where it's going to go. I mean, it's always hard to change a huge system like that. We'll see. By the way, I wanted to mention two other podcasts that I really like. One is by Julia Galef, Rationally Speaking. It's only like 30 to 40 minutes long mostly, and she has also very interesting guests, and she had like over 200 podcasts now. And the one that Daniel Schmachtenberger is doing, I forget its name right now. He's a very interesting character. He's like combining spirituality and science as well as I have heard anyone ever talk. It's amazing.
You'll have to write
it's
that
like
name down.
It's like future thinking or something. It's Daniel Schmachtenberger.
Write his surname down. I'll never get that one.
Yeah, yeah. I will.
Future thinkers.
There you are.
He's an amazing individual.
It sounds like what you're saying there is people... It's almost like self-awareness, like understanding that you're not chained to this education system. There's an education system called the World Wide Web, and you just got to know how to get there, you know?
Right, right.
So you talked a little bit about Tim Ferriss' podcast, not listening to it anymore. I used to listen to it. I don't listen to it anymore.
Mm-hmm. Why did you quit?
He was talking about the same stuff with kind of the same kind of people, and I didn't think I was growing or out of it. And you said it's because you get interested in different things. What are the real main changes in your life? That I know, because there's probably loads, but what are the key few for you that, wow, I can't believe I'm like this now, and I was never like this before?
What did I not believe? I've changed some views, definitely. In terms of the things I would be doing with my time, I didn't think I would play poker for this long, maybe. No, actually, that was definitely part of a possibility. Let's see. I think, actually, ever since I kind of got into effective altruism, which was now like 5-6 years ago, it's just been a constantly growing interest as well as amount of hours per week that I'm putting into it, even though it sometimes fluctuates, of course. But I therefore am just doing more of the things that I have been interested in, and I'm like very fortunate and lucky to be in a position where I can do the things that interest me and spend quite a bit of time on them. So I guess I thought I might do more something classical businessy or a startup at some point, and it still might be the case. I'm releasing an app now in a few days for accounting and poker, but that's not
accounting.
Really a startup. Yeah, just because like so much money is lost by bad accounting, and it's just something that's terrible that we still didn't have for all these years. Just like a double confirmation from both sides.
Right.
Do you want to swap? Okay, the swap is on, and like, or you give someone $1,000. And they say, I've given you $1,000, and then both sides confirm, and that's a legally binding contract already. And it's just neat to have that within an app where you see how much, who owes you how much, etc.
And what's that called?
The name is currently Verified, but we might change it. Okay. We'll release a beta in a few days, try it out here, and then just have a full version in a month or so.
Are you saying that you probably in the past would have had this kind of like, almost like an entrepreneurial kind of mindset, and now you might still have, but your what you would do with that money is different?
I've noticed some weaknesses in myself that have like sustained over the years, and one of that is kind of like flakiness in terms of I get distracted by a new topic and then I leave an old one a little bit behind that actually, if I was running a startup, I would have needed to stick with the one thing for the next years and just do that. But I like abandon it for a week and then come back to it afterwards and kind of like this ability to move between things and like have one week that's like about this, the next week is about that topic, the next week is about this, and like do it in phases. And therefore, I noticed I couldn't be like in the founder CEO type role at all, because like that needs someone else to do that totally. And therefore, I don't know, I need people that are more consistent, and then I sometimes can jump in, and if it's a topic I have knowledge about, then advise or not. Yeah, so I'm investing in some things, etc. Like,
okay,
and like talking to the people sometimes, that seems to be the better way. And in the meantime, just learn and try to get better at things.
I think this next question is kind of on a similar theme, I guess, is if you could face one of your fears head on and conquer it, what would it be right now?
So I did a guided meditation in 2014 that like exposed some of those with a guy called Shay Matthews in Australia. I think he does it also like for money. That kind of brought, what he did was, which I liked this exercise a lot, and maybe one can find it as well how it worked, but it was like meditating and finding my state that I'm the happiest in, and then the state that I'm the unhappiest in, and me noticing like the very like fears that come up that make me very unhappy. Why do you have, what is going on while you are the kind of like saddest, most depressed version of yourself, or the happiest? I don't that much believe that there is like one true self within everyone. I think we're like more complicated, and there is many versions of me, an introvert, an extroverted one, etc. And I think those are all real. It's just that it depends on the environment, etc. Anyway, what it came to was, I'm scared of that there is not enough time and that I'm not good enough. So like the biggest fear is putting out content that is not good enough, right, or like sending out just unfinished, like non-perfect texts or messages or something like that, and that costs me too much time. And that's definitely kind of like a fear, which also relates to like an ego about wanting to seem smart or something like that, probably. So something around that, just like releasing, like I mentioned it to a friend recently who I had this conversation about, that like releasing a blog post that I only worked 30 minutes on, but everyone thinks I worked on it for like 2 days.
Yeah.
And just like that would be facing it head on. I don't know if I'm ready for that yet, but something like this.
There's a program that Seth Godin does, a marketing program called the Alt-MBA, where you work for a month and it's just ridiculous how much you do in that month. And he says, I know you can't do it at all, but I just want you to learn to ship.
Ship.
You know, and that might,
I'm bad at that. That's exactly it.
What's the hardest transition you've had to make in your life?
That was easy. But I used to live alone and like it, and now I live with Liv. it's not a hard transition, though. She's just kind of...
Well, it is. Surely it is, right? I'm in the Bahamas, and what do people normally say? Oh, do you miss your family? No, I don't, because I'm on my own, and I like being on my own, and I can sleep on my own. Yeah, I can do what I want, and, you know, it is a difficult transition living with somebody, you know?
Yeah, totally. I guess you're enjoying the times by yourself, like being away, more so than if you were away and only had the version of you being away for like a full year out of a year.
Mm.
So, it's a very easy transition towards that, probably. What's a hard one? I think I've just been very lucky. I didn't have to have like a very hard transition.
Okay.
Poker really allowed me to kind of do the things more frequently that I want to do, and therefore there is not really a hard thing I needed to stick with that was very uncomfortable. I guess also in part because often the hard things excite me to a degree, like, I don't know, having to study hard on a topic or something like this, which it's not a hard thing in life to do anyway, so it's like, does barely fit the bill, but it maybe is also a mindset thing, but I think mostly it's just that I don't have to do hard things currently.
Let's touch upon the loneliness thing a little bit. Mm-hmm. You know, in my community with the people who don't drink alcohol anymore, once they make that decision to be someone who doesn't drink alcohol, they feel intense loneliness because everybody around them is drinking alcohol. It's very similar to a vegan, non-vegan dynamic. We've added on top that everything they do socially, you know, there's not a pig's head everywhere, there's beer everywhere, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So they feel this pull to go back and drink because they believe that is now going to make them part of the tribe. And when I was in Malta recently, I was interviewing a lot of poker players, and every single one of them, for some reason, said that their biggest challenge was loneliness.
Yeah.
You know, how has loneliness affected you? How have you dealt with it? I asked Liv the same kind of questions yesterday. How do you then turn that around? Where does the control in it lie? I know I'm not asking you a direct question, mm-hmm. but just give me your thoughts on loneliness and solitude and all that kind of thing.
I agree. It's something that fortunately is starting to being talked about more, but it is one of the most unfortunate things because it's not noticeable if someone eats and doesn't have a physical pain and something easily fixable. It's like the opposite. If it's a mechanical problem within your body, it's like something fixable often, except if it's very bad, of course. But that one just like eats away at you for years. So it's very rough. And I did have loneliness like when I was like the first year at university. I didn't straight connect because I came in late, etc., and then was like spending time more alone. Then I kind of like restarted and got fortunate that it worked out. Other loneliness that I experienced was when I had huge downswing, like won my first million and lost it, and then kind of didn't do the things that I wanted to do and like just had a slightly different life than I wanted it. But that is still weak in comparison to like what actual loneliness can be. Like if it drives you to do, because you lose actually your whole community, like that's really rough. Like when I was at school in Germany, I worked at a soup kitchen on the weekends as well. And there, like Germany has a great welfare system. And actually you can, like anyone who lives on the street, like homeless people can still get a home and like are really being helped with work and like some minimal amount of money, like very much so. But still, we had homeless people, quite a few. And as I understood it, like one of the reasons for that was that people had their community that they lived with there, I was told by a few people. And like when they then leave that and now do have shelter somewhere, and not shelter, but actually like a home, they are not part of this community anymore and they become lonely. So this is why some people like not choose homelessness. It's not an actual choice where you're given all of the options and you're choosing between. It's rather that it's even worse to be lonely than it is to not have a home, it seems. So that quite stuck out as well back then. It's good that we're talking about it more. And I don't know where this
Well, I think go. I think one of the problems is as well is like I realized when I got to the Bahamas a couple of days ago that I was intensely lonely because I realized that I would have a conversation like this and then I would be like, I really deeply connect with Igor and I want to give him a hug, but then I don't want to let him go. I'm like, oh, come on, let's go and have dinner tonight, Lala. And I'm like, why am I thinking like this? And yet the poker player's just like, well, I can see you, I'm gone. And then I realize it's because I don't have enough connection in my life. Uh-huh. So you could not even be aware of it, and mm-hmm. You can be blaming it on someone else. So okay, we got people who are lonely, mm-hmm. right? You're not lonely anymore. You have a superb network of different people of different range and abilities, genders, social classes. Where do you stand on all that thing? Like, is there Lee Davies giving off a great energy, so I'm going to attract people with great energy? Does Lee Davies say to himself, right, these are the people I want to surround myself with, these are the values, I'm going to go get him. Igor's one of those, so I'm going to get his number. Mm-hmm. Where do you lie on that old kind of making friends and sort... dealing with the fact that you're lonely, you know?
I think, I mean, different things work for different people, and I know that quite, that there are some who do it as like a methodical, I want to get connected with this person and then blah, something will happen. But that seems to me like, I mean, and that's all fine, but I like a different approach more, which is just incrementally working on oneself, and then I think things fall into place. And that, like, if you do interesting things, you will meet interesting people. If you do sports, you will meet people that like to do the same sports, and by that you will have similar interests already. And I think those things then fall into place. You might not meet someone directly, but like at some point you will definitely connect with someone. Mm. While, I don't know, going to the gym, maybe not so much. But like if you go, for example, bouldering, there's many people there. Many are going there by themselves. It's mostly like quite interesting. It's like just nerdy engineers, basically, yeah, that boulder. And it's a great sport. Everyone is super helpful and kind. And like that's definitely a place one can go, or like yoga classes, etc. Otherwise, I think, and also like I guess loneliness also connected often to depression, because that kind of like puts you more into the thing of thinking about self, and it's harder to connect then as well. And a friend of mine went through it quite intensely, where like many things in life were not falling into place and became bad around relationship, wealth, meaning, just really everything pretty much. And what he did was he was grinding away on every aspect of it. Like he started like for the meaning and interests and mental fortitude, he was just reading more interesting things than before. He was just not trying to not Netflix and chill, but rather read interesting articles, and then like try to become just more interested in the world. For relationships, he just was more actively pushing himself to go out and like be, just try a bit like harder in terms of like make the first connection. It doesn't work, that's fine, something else, like just like be easier with yourself around that. And for wealth, he was just, well, I gotta grind lower right now, I gotta do something else, and like studied again. And yeah, I think it's about incremental improvements. Mm. Mostly, and it's hard to find like the like one thing that just like is gonna relieve it all. Because even like if there was one thing, I'm not saying that you said it at all. Yeah. If there was one thing, then it would probably be falling in love with the ideal partner. Like that can just remove loneliness like that. But you're also less likely to have an interesting, good relationship with your partner if you haven't worked on yourself more.
I agree. Yeah.
So therefore, this is kind of the thing that allows, that is kind of the platform that allows for the good things to happen afterwards. So I think that it's really helpful. And that touches on anything like yoga, mindfulness, meditation, reading interesting articles, thinking about interesting problems, learning a new language, coding, any type of topic, like something with your hands. Like
It is all the same. I mean, the things that came out when you were talking there was procrastination come out in my mind, a fear, a trust. So it's like I need to get off my ass, procrastination. I need to trust that when I experience, you know, asking Igor for his number, I'm not going to feel terrible. If he says no, it's not the end of the world.
And it's also less, I think, about oneself in these situations than in the one's mind place it into. Because, I mean, pretty much by probably like kind of like by definition, depression is in part like happening constantly by like having like a mental dialogue which is pretty negative in your own head. So if we assume that that's the base line that one has currently, then probably that's kind of like a it biases any perception of the outside environment to be interpreted more negatively than it is.
Yeah.
Okay, so what other reasons might there be for like someone not giving their number, which is, by the way, me not preparing you to not give their number, because you already have my number. But it's more that, and I know, like, it's, what is it called? There is, like, it's also, like, a known bias that the reasons that if someone does some action, one is more inclined to think that that was because they thought this and this of me. But the reality is they have the same mental dialogue in their head, probably to a degree. So their things happen more for their own reasons than you assume. Mm. And like they think that the things around them happen because of them as well. And that's like more frequently the case. So most frequently it will be if someone doesn't give it, it's not because they didn't like that hue that you define yourself as you, but rather they are like very tight with numbers, or they just saw that one part of you for the few minutes and that was it, and they have a different association with those things. And I think that helps already to just make yourself less sad a little bit.
Well, you can also use the old odds, can't you? You know, you can say to yourself, actually, I feel a it's really unusual to feel a connection to someone and then not that person not feel a connection with you, because you wouldn't feel a connection.
If that happens often, you probably need to ask yourself, like, why do I feel a connection when others don't? There is probably something where one just has like a miscalibration of what some part of it means. It doesn't mean that you're inherently odd or wrong and can't be fixed. Just like, oh, I might over assume that this part of a smile actually means this, but it might just be that like this is a socially friendly smile that they do.
Yeah, definitely. And finally, how does How does serving others make you feel?
The thing is, I used to do it more in interaction where, like, I like when I was at soup kitchen, I saw the people I was helping with that. Mm. Now my charity is like quite removed from the empathetic aspect. I kind of just believe in the numbers that it works, and the numbers make me happy. So I'm just like redefining it, because the word serve. Like I'm not there at the spot to give the thing in the end. But I would actually argue that you don't need to be at all to still have the feeling that you're contributing, and also to actually be contributing. Because if you donate so that 10 people can go out and help at the spot, then, well, without that donation, it wouldn't have happened. Therefore, like, this is an actual contribution. Or, like, if you buy medicine that then, like, is being distributed. Overall, like, it actually helped. The thing it helped me the most was when I, at different times, was, like, I don't know, like, going through a downswing and, like, not being sure about poker or something. Like, it is just a helpful thought in one's mind, whew, like at least I did that, like at least like some good definitely came out of this whole experience. Similarly, like when, I don't know, not turbulences, but something odd is going on in the plane and you're like, will I die here? Then it's like, well, the life wasn't for nothing. Maybe I've been like a net positive on life overall. And that helps, like that also makes you in general happier, a bit calmer, I think. So, and that's often recommended if you feel bad about yourself. Like that's usually like one of the things that I read that I thought were really true. One was go out to nature, have a walk, come back. Number two was like work on your long-term project, just like make some headway on something. And three was call your grandma, have a 5-minute conversation, make her happy, call someone else, just make someone else happy. Like that's, and you see also your value then. And I think it's totally fine to feel good about yourself doing good things, because guess what? The other side that is being helped is not sad about you feeling good. They don't want you doing it neutrally. Like if you're also feeling good additional to having done something good, like it's a positive side effect, not a negative one.
I say the same to the people on our forum. We call our movement Strive. We're trying to become 1 million people that don't drink alcohol. And I always say to them, it doesn't matter what stage you're in. Like if you just stopped today and Igor's stopped for a year, but he just posts on there that he's having a really tough time today, and you just say, wow, you know, I'm here for you. That's it.
Or I'm so impressed how much you've done already.
You just helped someone. You're just going to feel so much better, you know. You don't need to have all the answers and all the tricks.
It is just helpful to have like a connection in those situations sometimes. And so overall I think it's It's not really unappreciated, but we all know this feeling. Like, we just had holiday season, and like people were gifting things on Christmas. And if you gift someone a thing that makes them smile, that's such a good experience for yourself as well. And you can get that throughout the year in other ways as well.
Yeah. Thank you for your time, Igor.
Absolutely.
Ruth said she loved where she was just after 30 days of working on the Truth About Alcohol Taster. Sue said the Truth About Alcohol Taster was hand on heart the best decision she ever made. I have learned that alcohol is no place in my life and I am no longer alone, said Rhonda. Jennifer said the intensive helped her beyond just quitting drinking. She now leads a fuller, more awakened life. Nikki said the intensive brought a depth of awareness that has changed the way she now views the world. Talking about the intensive, Maureen said, you will not regret taking this experience, but you will regret passing it up. Shit gets real. You are in it. And that, for me, is reason enough to dive in. The self-growth and discovery it offers is profound, as are the connections you make. Talking about Strive, Bonnie said, the people in Strive felt like new friends with lots of wonderful support for each other. Tony said, Strive is inclusive and supportive. There is so much empathy, understanding, and encouragement. And this is where I am not a number on a balance sheet. This is where I found home. Julian said, I believe we are defined by the people and ideas we surround ourselves with. And so the warmth, support, and personal growth I've found at Strive make it the place I want to be, the place I have to be. You drank alone. Do not quit alone. Head to thetruthaboutalcohol.co.uk and invest in yourself today. Become someone that doesn't drink alcohol.